Oh, God. So talking to my husband. Episode 51 of There Is No Offseason, a podcast from Baseball Prospectus focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley, and I am joined by BP's fantasy manager and supportive internet father figure, Brett Sayer, and my fellow author, unsupportive internet anti-hero, Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. Say hi to everyone and tell them where they can find you on the interwebs. And Brett, let's start with you.
You can find me at baseballprospectus.com and thedynastyguru.com and on Twitter at dynastyguru, correct?
You can find me at Baseball Prospectus, at the Dynasty Guru, and at Fox Sports/MLB. And you can find me on Twitter at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in corrupt and difficult, Goldstein. Ben?
Yeah, that's fair. You can also find me at Baseball Prospectus. You can also find me at the Dynasty Guru. You can find me at BP Boston, and you can find me on Twitter at Ben Carsley. You can find this podcast on Twitter via the, as Rob Manfred would say, aptly named at Dino Podcast handle. And you can ask us questions and talk to us about your feelings by emailing us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. So a lot to get through tonight. First, as you will no doubt have noticed, Mao could not join us for this biweekly installment of Tino. So we anticipate he'll be back two Tuesdays from today, but right now we must go onward and upward without him. So this week we are going to continue on with our U25 Dynasty League ranking series, even though we're aware that the series is running a bit long and not all of these players are actually U25 anymore. Let's not get hung up in the details. And of course we're going to talk some MLB drafts, and I believe we are going to hold a mock draft among the three of us, just like we did last year. But first, you know, we don't want to shock your system too much. I'm sure it's hard to adjust to Mao's absence, so we'll start with a familiar pattern, and that will be reader emails. And our first reader email this week is from Joe. Joe says, "Dear Rat Pack, I have a dilemma with the first base options in my 14-team Dynasty League, OBP and slugging instead of average. I'm close to contention in this league, and I'm trying to figure out whether or not Ryan Howard is worth rostering as a corner infield with my current roster state. I'd probably drop Willin Rosario, my number three catcher, or Christian Walker, my number four first baseman. Is the long-term outlook for those two worth hanging on to, or would you feel comfortable letting one go? Would you let go of both to get Howard and Oakland's Matt Olson? Thank you for your time and relative attention, Joe." So some non-elite first basemen here, both in the majors and in terms of dynasty prospects. I don't think we've touched on a lot of these guys terribly frequently to this point. So, Craig, why don't you lead us off?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would drop Christian Walker for Ryan Howard, the office character, at this point. He's not really going anywhere in Baltimore. I think playing time will be hard to come by, and he was someone you kind of picked up because he was at the major league level towards the tail end of last year, and it was someone who was playing. If you're in a deep enough league where that is really the bar that needs to be passed, the power just isn't really there for first base, and he doesn't hit, you know, 300 or above to make up for it. So I would definitely drop him for Ryan Howard, and frankly, I don't even understand the concept of four first basemen unless some of them have other eligibilities. As for Rosario, I've never been his biggest fan, and I don't think you need that many catchers, so I probably would make the switch for Olson. Although I guess I would see if he's worth anything, you could try and trade him, even if it's just for a late round draft pick or something like that. I actually like Olson a little bit, and I think he's definitely I would swap him for Walker as well. So I think he's definitely an easy pickup for some depth, but it's not really clear, you know, if you're giving these guys major league or, you know, roster spots, or if you have a separate minor leagues that they would slot into. But in a 14-team league, I would be inclined to maximize roster space by giving spots to major league players if you don't have a separate minors. I don't think you need to jump on Olsen immediately if you don't have a separate minor leagues. If you do, I would definitely do that. Brett, any thoughts?
I'm just amazed that Craig actually said that that's too many catchers.
I know. I was taken aback as well.
Two is good. Three is, I mean, what do you need three catchers for?
Oh, I am on that boat, but that's
yeah, good. It's weird for me.
It's just surprising. That must have been an out of body experience.
I'm feeling a little feverish. Maybe something's coming on.
Maybe. I would do the same thing. I would drop both for both. Ryan Howard has done enough this year to warrant starting in, you know, medium mixed leagues. I wouldn't do it in super shallow mixed leagues. But interestingly enough, Ryan Howard has a 250 isolated power this year. The last time he had a 250 isolated power was in 2009 when he finished third in MVP voting. So clearly the rest of his game is deteriorated, but he's got the power stroke back a little bit, which is, you know, which is kind of nice to see. I like to root for these older guys to have, you know, somewhat bounce back seasons, and, you know, Howard hitting 245 with 11 homers at this point certainly qualifies as a bounce back season. Olsen, I think we're all learning that the power that showed up in the Cal League was a little fluky, but not a total detriment to his overall value. I think especially in OBP league, Olsen's a guy who I think, even if he's only a, you know, 20 home run hitter at the major league level, which I think is realistic, he could be a guy who gets on base, you know, close to 40% of the time, maybe like a 375, 380 on base if it works. So in a league like this, that's absolutely worth dumping these guys for. Christian Walker and Rosario is just slightly behind him. Yeah. Ben.
Christian Walker is good for annual comments and probably not much else at this point.
I don't even know how many annual comments Christian Walker has left in him. Pretty soon he's not going to make that initial cut of 60 players.
But it's easy fodder, at least.
That's true, but he might be so far removed from relevant that... Then again, I wrote about Moises Sierra, so I guess there's a long shelf life on these things.
That's true. Well, let's play the annual game with him.
Lineouts live forever, Ben.
Yeah. What year is Christian Walker just a lineout, and what year is Christian Walker out of the book entirely?
Lineout in the 2017 annual, out of the book in the 2019 annual.
I was gonna say 2016 and 2018.
I was going to say 2017 and 2019, but they're all there. I like it. They're all
also, I should add that I had in my head for a long time that Matt Olson was, I conflated him with Christian Walker a little bit, was like a shorter guy who had a power breakout and I didn't think it would be sustainable, but he's actually, like, he's 6'4". He's a really big guy, so him being able to leverage that swing and create power out of it isn't that surprising. And Brett, you were talking about, because this is an OBP and slugging league instead of average, I just went and looked to see how he was doing in AA this year. He's walking at 20% in AA.
Yeah.
And that's not an accident. He walked at 18.5% in high A. He's definitely an OBP target.
Yeah. Completely agree.
Maybe. Yeah, and we talked about Olsen before the year as a guy who would probably be a good buy low candidate around this time because he was exiting the Cal League. The numbers weren't going to be as flashy, but you can still buy in the basic skill set. And that's basically exactly what we're seeing. You know, the average is down, but everything else across the board is still pretty promising. So, I don't have anything to add. Walker is clearly the odd man out here. I understand why you'd go back and forth between Olsen and Rosario, but for me, it's, I think I'd actually rank them in the Dynasty League, Olsen, Howard, Rosario, Walker.
Yeah. Especially in an OBP league, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and just to throw it out there as an interesting twist, Matt Olsen has actually played the majority of the last, you know, 4 weeks or so in right field at AA. So he may not just be a first baseman after all. I have absolutely no idea whether he can stick in the outfield, but they're trying him there. So who knows?
I did not know that either. Okay. Go ahead, Craig.
No, I was just going to say him in the Oakland outfield could be an adventure, but
yeah. Brandon Moss was out there. He can't,
it's
he can't point. Possibly.
It's a good, it's a strong, Moss. It's a strong point.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. It's going fine for the Mariners, right? Let's just put immovable objects in the corner outfield. It'll all work itself out. All right. Very good then. So on that, I think we can move on to the second reader email of the week. And this one is from Jack. Jack says, I'm sure all of your questions sound alike this week, but pick mine because I put it in this cool font. Podcast fans like this stuff. And he really did format it in a strange font. So I'm well on my way to having the first pick next season by design. As of today, my big board has Brendan Rodgers first, but after that, I leave the first-year player draft and start wondering about Eddie Julio Martinez. What do you guys think of him? Would anyone take him over Rodgers, assuming he goes to an average home stadium team? Thank you for your help. Respectfully, Jack. So I think there are a few lessons that we can take from this. First of all, is that anything you can do to stand out in these emails you send us is good, because we will read anything that amuses us even slightly, even if you get no joy out of it, listeners. And I think you're used to that after 51 episodes. And second of all, you all know I'm going to kick this out to Brett, because I barely even know who Martinez is. So Brett, what do you think?
I think there's just about a 0% chance that that Martinez gets taken over Brendan Rodgers in any dynasty drafts next year. Part of that is the fact that Rodgers has just been reinforced with Coors Field, which is literally a match made in heaven. But other than that, Martinez is a really interesting guy. He's someone who everyone is sort of still learning about, at least in the public sphere. And he's 20 years old. He's kind of a small-ish guy, but there are reports have his tools as somewhere between average and plus almost across the board. I think the people who have it as plus are getting a little overexcited at this point, but he's definitely someone who throughout the workout process and signing process is going to build value. I think it was Jesse Sanchez put out something that either he or a scout comped him to Andrew Jones, and that seems a little bold, but he's a center fielder. He probably can stick in center field. He's got some power. He's got some speed. He doesn't have a ton of anything. Long story short, unless he is just being completely undersold by a lot of the initial reports that are out there, I think this is more of a guy who might end up going in the first round of dynasty drafts, not someone who is going to be in competition for the first overall pick, even in a somewhat down 2015 draft class.
Yeah, you just totally stole the words out of my mouth. Just exactly what I was going to say.
Said what we were all thinking.
Yeah, I mean, do you even have anything to add? That was just pretty textbook.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, it's nice to give Brett a gimme, but, you know.
Right. Yeah, well, I think he needs it from time to time, just as a little pick-me-up. Sort of a nod to seniority and what have you. Yeah. I'd like to point out that, you know, potentially he could go ahead of Rodgers because that's the draft, but I think we can say at this point it doesn't look likely.
That's factual.
Couldn't have said it better.
All right. Excellent. Our final reader email this week is from Tyler. Tyler says, Brett and Sons, truer than ever this week. Maybe I have a short memory, but 2015 feels like it's been hashtag year of the prospect. Dozens of top 100 names have made the leap so far, and the rumor mill has confirmed that whoever your favorite prospect is, he's close to being called up right now. Here are some names, since I know that Ben, Craig, and Brett only communicate via lists. Sorry, Mao, I'll send an infographic in another email. Say you're in a 16-team standard league and currently in 8th place, hoping to make a push in the second half. These names are all on your bench or minor league reserves. Do you start them every day, start them against specific matchups, hold them on the bench slash minors, or sell for someone to help you contend right now? If you choose to sell, please clarify if you recommend selling ASAP for whatever you can get or holding out for the best value, assuming value increases. If your answer would be different for a 20-team league, please clarify. Okay, so I will briefly just run us through the hitters and pitchers that he lists, and then I will try to throw out an opinion or two. So for hitters, he goes with Dalton Pompey, Corey Spangenberg, Luis Sardinas, Blake Swihart, Billy Burns, Wilmer Defoe, Eddie Rosario. For pitchers, Lance McCullers, Michael Lorenzen, Mike Foltynewicz, Chi-Chi, Syndergaard, Mats, and Ross. So I'm a little confused by exactly what Tyler is asking. I guess we can sort of, I'll reverse engineer this, which is not what that phrase means, and go backwards. No, you never sell anyone just to sell them. So please do not make a desperate move so that you can move up from middle of the pack. You know, climbing from 8 to 1 in a 16-team league is not terribly easy. So there's the obvious part of this out of the way. In terms of would you start them in specific matchups, I think yes for some of the pitchers you have. You know, I could see some scenarios in which you'd want to be starting McCullers. Syndergaard, you should be starting pretty much every time out. Now that Joe Ross is up, potentially. So I think with pitchers, you should play specific matchups. None of these hitters really look worthy of playing right now to me. Maybe Billy Burns should be on your bench if you really, really need speed. But even in a 16-team league, guys like, you know, Spangenberg and Sardinas and Rosario, to me, they're fringe roster guys, not really, you know, core roster components moving forward. And I think, you know, in Pompey and Swihart and a few of the pitchers, you have players you're going to want to keep for a long time. So if you can keep them on your minor league reserves for as long as possible, that is useful. I don't know how much you're going to get out of any of them this year, although I do think Pompey could be somewhat of a factor in the second half. So that was like a long-winded Brett answer. I spoke for so long. I'm pretty impressed with myself. Brett, do you want to now say something snarky and uninformative and we can just trade places?
No. I'd rather not.
Okay.
I guess, it really comes down to whether you think you can win. There's a big difference between 8th place and 15 points out versus 8th place and 35 points out. If you're 35 points out, you're not going for it at this point, especially if you analyze the teams at the top and are substantially behind them in talent. But, you know, there are definitely guys on here that I might try to sell on. I would be selling on Billy Burns and Mike Foltynewicz. I don't buy Billy Burns as a major league hitter. I just don't. He's been really good this year, and I think you can spin it. He's hitting .314 with 2 homers and 10 steals in 33 games. And, you know, you play the prorated game and that is, you know, probably a top 10 outfielder. So I think he certainly has value. I don't think this sticks. I think he's a reserve outfielder, sort of in the mold of a Jared Dyson, but, this is just not, I don't think this is going to work. That said, I mean, Dyson does have some value in a deep league with his steals, but, Foltynewicz has been striking out a lot of people in his first go round, and I think he's certainly raised his stock from what we thought coming into the season. He struck out more than the batter in inning. He's actually kept his walks reasonably low. He's only walked 15 in 42 innings. But I don't, I don't see the command and control holding up enough for him to be a particularly good starting pitcher, even in a mixed league, even in a deeper mixed league. I think in this day and age, you can get strikeouts elsewhere without being as damaging as he could be. And someone might look at his strikeouts and want to buy in on it. But that's really it. I wouldn't, if you think you have a chance to really push in, I would consider dealing Blake Swihart. I think his value is pretty high right now. And, you know, in a one catcher league, he's certainly very valuable, but he's not irreplaceable, especially if you have a pretty good catching option already in the majors. And the other guy who I would, if he has value, try to get something for is Michael Lorenzen. I don't buy that either in the long run as a starter. But those are mine. And Chris Heston just no hit the Mets, which is super awesome. I'm going to turn that off now. Craig.
Brett, would you trade all of these hitters, all of these players together for Chris Heston in a fantasy league? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay.
Is it a no-hitter league?
Obvious.
Obviously.
I will try and keep it brief because we kind of went long on this. I was going to point out Lorenzen. I don't really believe in him at all as a fantasy asset beyond like just a guy who accrues innings. I don't think he misses nearly enough bats. Foltynewicz, I don't think he's going to strike out a batter in an inning, but I do believe in the healing powers of Roger McDowell, and so I do think he can be a viable fourth fantasy starter going forward. I mean, I think he can chew up a lot of innings and miss more bats than a guy like Lorenzen. I think if you're talking about selling high, I think you could trade Lance McCullers. There is a lot of talk about him being a reliever almost, you know, from the moment he was drafted. I think he's pretty obviously more than that now, but I don't know that his ultimate profile was all that much different than Foltynewicz's, and he doesn't have quite the frame as Foltynewicz, I think. In terms of starting these guys every day versus matchups, I mean, I think you can always play matchups. If you're looking for guys that I wouldn't start, I mean, I don't think you have any reason to start Corey Spangenberg in a 16-team league. And I would say the same for Luis Sardinas, unless you're hard up for speed. Billy Burns, I would play while he's hot, but as Brett said, I would trade him. Defoe is in Double-A, so perhaps this question was a little bit older, but he is obviously not going to be doing anything for you at this point. But I think that's all I can add on this.
That's pretty.
Yeah, I'll just jump in and say that Corey Spangenberg I have in TDGX, which is a 20-team league, and he's riding my bench.
I have him in an NL only, and I'm playing him because he plays. But
I think that's actually how it's pronounced.
What?
Ugh.
Well, the upsetting thing is that I think it's actually pronounced Spangenberg.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I heard that. Yeah, that's but not that's good. Just not gonna
that's bad.
Yeah, I'm not gonna do it. I'm just not.
And quite frankly, he hasn't earned it.
Agreed.
Yeah. Chris Heston, no hitter, man.
Can't predict ball.
The Mets had fewer hits against Chris Heston tonight than Enya had in the late 1990s. Welcome back to episode 51 of Tino. I hope you used that break to try and guess who's going to no-hit the Mets next. So obviously, we're recording this just 2 days after the first, or 1 day after the first round of the MLB draft, and we have plenty to talk about on that front. But before we get into a sort of mini mock dynasty draft in terms of the players who were just taken yesterday, instead we're going to continue on with our U25 series and just do sort of a quick hit of our NL West edition. Quite frankly, it's too bad the quick hit didn't come 2 weeks ago when we had to log through the AL Central, because the NL West is actually a pretty good division when it comes to this particular ranking. But without further ado, so that we can just breeze through this and get to the MLB draft portion of the evening, Brett, here are the keys that I so often give you.
Okay, let's jump right into all of this NL West goodness. Yasiel Puig is number one on both of your lists. That's not terribly surprising. He would be number one on mine as well. Where we start to differ is after that. So, Ben, you have Madison Bumgarner at two. Craig, you have him at four. Craig, is this more of a reflection in your mind on Bumgarner's value going forward, or on a statement in the positive light of the two guys that you put ahead of him?
It's more about the guys I put ahead of him. Obviously, Bumgarner is an elite pitcher, but I just think that given the state of offense in the league right now, and you know where you can find high quality pitching, I wanted to go with I went with two bats ahead of him in Nolan Arenado and Jock Peterson, and I was surprised to find myself leaning Peterson ahead of him. I know people probably think it's a little bit of a biased thing since I'm a Dodgers fan, but I will admit I was never the biggest Jock Peterson supporter. But you know, Ben and I were talking about this while we were formulating the lists, and he's got 17 homers already. And I did not think he had – that was like what I expected for a full season output, and it's June 9th. So I kind of reevaluated something there. And even if he's not a high average hitter, you know, between his speed and that type of power, even if it's not quite, you know, 30-plus homer power going forward, even if it's 25 with that type of speed, I'd kind of rather go after those offensive categories than go with a starter who's already at a disadvantage in most leagues, and then just, again, it's kind of the depth and quality of pitching available versus what's available in terms of bats.
Fair enough. So keeping on Peterson a little bit, Ben, you have Corey Seager ahead of Jock Peterson on your list. You have Seager at four and Peterson at five. One, how close are they? And two, how good do you think Seager can be?
In terms of how close they are a coin toss to the point where when this article goes live, I'm not even entirely sure they'll still be in that order. I've gone back and forth on them a few times since I made this list. Well, I've really come around on Seager because I think he can stick at shortstop for a little bit now, and I really didn't believe that was the case, you know, when he was earlier on in his career. I know I was actually the low guy on Seager, not in terms of this year's rankings, but last year's rankings. You know, I didn't really have him as an elite prospect yet, even though he was quite good in A-ball in 2013. But now I think he's a shortstop. I don't know how you can't believe in the hit tool. I do think he'll be someone who routinely hits four double-digit homers, and shortstop is really god-awful right now. I don't think he's anywhere near as good as Xander Bogaerts, but sort of the same way a lot of people came around on Xander Bogaerts and what he could do if he stayed at shortstop, I sort of view Seager as a lesser version of that, and that's insanely valuable.
I agree with you. So I'm used to seeing Ben as the high man on Jonathan Gray. I'm not gonna compare the two of you guys because you only have him one slot apart. But Gray's been very up and down in his pro career. What's Ben? What's your temperature on Gray right now? And about how many pitching prospects in baseball would you have ahead of him?
What temperature is terrified? I don't know what that is. That's where I am. I was talking to Craig about this before the podcast tonight. I know he hasn't been very inspiring this year. Granted, he's been better later, but I really don't know exactly how I feel about him. I know a lot of BP guys saw Gray in Arizona actually the day I flew out. It's a shame I didn't get the chance to see him. But most of the reviews I heard were not overwhelmingly positive. So I can't really bring myself to be as high on Gray as I want to be, considering that his, you know, home park is also Coors Field. For a long time, I've been the guy saying, that doesn't matter, he's so good, he can overcome that. I'm not really sure that's the case anymore. On this list alone, I have Urias and Bradley ahead of him in terms of starting pitching prospects. If you extrapolate that to the rest of baseball, Gray would probably be somewhere in the 8 to 10 range, which sounds good, but is actually down significantly from where I thought he would be.
Fair enough. So, Craig, next question for you. We'll talk about another Colorado guy who you've been high on, and kind of the same question. What's your temperature right now on Ryan McMahon? And I guess how many, where do you see him in overall fantasy prospect rankings at this point? Do you think he's a no doubt top 50 guy? Do you think he's even higher than that? Where are you right now?
I think that's a really tough question to me because so much of his production, and I say so much, literally all of his production has come in really generous hitters' parks. I've had the case made to me that the Rockies' low A ballpark is actually friendlier than their high A ballpark, which is in Modesto and in the Cal League, which obviously is saying something. So, you know, he's right now he's at 318, 413, 522, which is tremendous. But there's the mitigating factor that it's in the Cal League, and even his nice stats the year before have to be mitigated. I think he's got the potential to be an above average to plus bat with above average to plus power. I don't know that he can do plus on both of those at the same time. I think, you know, he might have to trade one for the other in some respects. But I do think I'd have him in my top 50. I think it would probably be in the 40 to 50 range. And if someone said, you know, I have him at 55 or 60, I that's something I can respect because when you get, you know, kind of that far into rankings, it ultimately, you know, it comes down to personal preference and things aren't clear cut, and the swaths of prospects that, you know, can move around within a tier get bigger and bigger. So I think I would have him in my top 50, but like I said, if someone had him just outside, I would respect that. But ultimately it's hard not to feel good about a guy who was a multi-sport athlete, so he was a little raw coming in, but who everyone liked the athleticism, liked the swing, had power potential, and he's kind of cashing in on that. So, you know, he even has a strong approach. He walked just under 10% last year. He's at 11.5% thus far in 2015, and, you know, he swings and misses a lot, but if you're going to be able to walk that much and get, you know, and make contact the way that he has been, you know, I think it's okay to swing and miss.
All right. Ben, next question for you. You have Pat Corbin at 11, which is 10 spots higher than Craig does. That's at least a substantial enough difference to warrant asking the question. How comfortable are you that we are going to see Corbin come back from Tommy John as the guy who broke out back in 2013 versus sort of the guy who I think we both liked before then, but someone who did not have quite the upside that he showed at that point?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's one I'm expecting to debate with Craig in the article, because I think this is the biggest disparity we have in any ranking. I this is such a cop-out answer, you can really rise. I don't think Corbin is quite as good as we saw in 2013, but I think he's better than we saw in 2012. He's someone who I think is going to spend a majority of his career as a number 3 to number 4 fantasy starter. So someone definitely worth owning, you know, regardless of league size. And a lot of this has to do with, I like the names behind Corbin, but a lot of these names have significant flaws. I mean, go down the list. Gray's been terribly inconsistent. Yasmani Tomas, start to his career has been bizarre. Tapia is far away. You know, Renfro has a lot of swing and miss to his game. Liriano has a lot of swing and miss and has injury history. So a lot of the guys I have listed directly behind him also have giant question marks. And, you know, we've seen Corbin do it. Everything appears to be going well in his rehab. So I'm fairly comfortable putting him here, even though it's higher than I thought I would have had him when I started to make this list.
All right, so that brings us to my final question, which is you both have Tuki Toussaint down at the bottom, kind of both sneaking into the bottom five here. I want both of you guys to answer this. He was a guy who was sort of a big upside play out of last year's draft. He hasn't taken, you know, an enormous step forward already, but I don't think he was really expected to. He's a little raw. He's still working through his early career development. Where, if things go well for Toussaint the rest of the year, where do you think he could jump up to on this list at the beginning of next season? Ben?
It's actually pretty easy for me to answer. So, I mean, I have Jose De Leon at 20, who, you know, is another sort of pop-up guy. You know, Toussaint wouldn't be a pop-up guy because we knew about him, but someone else who really took a number 2 starter, number 3 starter ceiling guy who took a massive step forward. I think Toussaint could do something similar to that, and then you could see him in the, you know, high teens to early 20s part of the list. Craig?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a fairly flexible list kind of once you get into the middle of it. I kind of had trouble ranking Tuki because I believe he's one of my favorite picks out of that draft class, and I do believe in him. It's just that he was so far away. And so I do think, you know, with his ability to miss bats, and I think there will come some refinement, I think he's going to be someone who's kind of middling until something clicks and he's just going to take off. And I think once that happens, you could easily push him up into the, you know, I have De Leon at 17. I have Tapia at 16. I have Chris Owings at 15. I think you can push him right into that range if he's progressing kind of as we might expect, and you're still anticipating another step forward. If we can, and I'll try and make it quick, but I wanted to talk about Pat Corbin a little bit, just the reason I had him so low. I like Corbin, but, you know, when I went back to refresh my memory on him and kind of his breakout season, it was the first season he had ever thrown 200 innings, and it was at the major league level, I should specify. And then he got hurt the next year, and on top of that, he was only missing bats. He struck out just under 21%, which is really – it's not a differentiator at this point. It's certainly not bad, but it's not really a differentiator. And given that he's in Chase, you know, he had a 3.41 ERA that year. That's not that much these days. Now, obviously, he could be better given the decline in offense and if you move those stats forward. But he wasn't the difference maker I kind of anticipated him to be. And I think the biggest thing to me is that I wonder how long it's going to take him to get to ramp back up to 200 quality innings. And I think it could be, you know, some time before we get there. And so that's kind of what made me discount him going forward.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But to stay on this point and more to speak about the guys behind him, I mean, a lot of these a lot of the arms we have listed behind Corbin, who's going to make an impact before he will, who is anything more than sort of a, you know, number four starter himself. I mean, I think you could say Braden Shipley could beat him there. Maybe De Leon. I don't really think so. So I just don't see anyone who has upside greater than Corbin who's likely to beat Corbin back other than Shipley. I understand Shipley above him.
I think that's fair, but I think those guys are worth more just overall in trade chips. Like, I think those guys are valued higher than Corbin is right now, and you could get more for them and would be valued more in the long term, I guess.
Yeah, I can buy that. I can buy that with some. That makes sense to me.
All right. That was all I had. So
that was pretty.
No Mao to kick this out to this time. So we'll have to move on. But we have a draft to get to.
We do.
It's pretty exciting.
I know. So how are we gonna? We didn't determine an order.
I did when I was throwing this together, just because someone, you know, we needed one. So in the random number generator that is my head, I went with Craig, Ben, Brett.
Do you remember when Brett looked at the rundown? Those were good times.
I do, but you know, we couldn't ask for that forever. At least he shows up on time now.
That's true.
Yeah.
To be fair, I looked at the rundown like 45 minutes ago.
Oh well, that's good.
So 15 minutes. So we're snaking this, I assume. Yes.
Yes, and cool. Just to remind people that we are taking into account the you know, the organizations these players were drafted by. So basically, this is a dynasty draft of these players now that we know where they're going to spend the early days of their careers, unless they get trade turners.
Yes, this is pure fantasy value, not a statement about the actual picks that these major league teams made.
Fair enough. And it's also not a reflection of just the quality of their names, although I would gladly at some point do a live podcast where we discuss those as well.
Okay, so are we – should I be going or
– I think you should be going. I think we've just – after an introduction like that, what more could you want?
Fair enough. Okay, I'm going to take – as God, you know, I want to take – the good name first.
Yeah.
It's so tempting. But I can't – what's more tempting to me is someone with Brendan Rodgers' overall offensive profile in Colorado. So I'm going to go with him. I think, you know, he just could be a plus all-around offensive force, and putting that in Colorado is just far too tempting to pass up on in a fantasy setting. You know, I know that he might not stay at shortstop. I think with his offensive tools, that won't necessarily matter. I've seen him, you know, it might be optimistic, but say people have a chance, say he has a chance at being a 25 home run hitter in the big leagues. I think those odds increase drastically if he makes it to Coors Field. So that's my guy.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I welcome any and all commentary, especially, obviously no offense intended, Ben, but Brett is kind of the draft expert among the three of us. So if you have something to add.
Whoa. Brett, I know who over half these guys are.
Yeah, right. And look, if you're still paying attention to the podcast at this point, you know Brendan Rodgers. You know what he's capable of. So I don't need to go any further on that one.
Indeed. Okay. Well, I'm going to do something totally and utterly boring and go with my man Dansby Swanson here at two. I certainly see that Rodgers has more upside, but I like the fact that Swanson has a very well-rounded set of tools. You know, Arizona will be a lovely place to hit if he gets there someday. And much like Brendan Rodgers, Dansby Swanson is also a shortstop, and you can never have enough shortstop prospects. So I think this one is pretty obvious. I think most people agree Rodgers is better than Swanson, but I think a lot of people would agree that Swanson is, if not the second best, certainly worthy of discussion in terms of overall talent. So that's that for me. And he has the best name in the draft.
Yeah, at least of the names that we're going to select here.
Yeah, I mean, even if you go beyond that, I think other than Trey Cabbage, I don't know.
Bubba Derby.
Bubba Derby's a pretty good
one. Bubba Derby's strong. Okay, maybe that's a dark horse.
Trey Cabbage. Let's be honest.
Is it very cabbage, though, or is it three cabbage? That's what I don't understand about Trey Cabbage.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
I'll get ahead of myself.
So, anyway, so I'm up next with two picks. It's going to be very likely that in almost all dynasty drafts, depending on what happens, obviously, with the international guys, I think Rodgers and Swanson are pretty much locks to go 1-2, or go near 1-2. So this is kind of going to be the point where, people are going to have to play favorites, I guess. So, I get two picks here, so I'm going to take advantage of it. I'm going to take the safe guy first, and I'm going to go with Alex Bregman at 3. He is pretty similar from a fantasy standpoint to Swanson. He is far less likely to be a shortstop, but he's someone who could certainly stick a middle infield. He's one of the best pure hitters in the draft. He might even have a slightly better hit tool than Swanson does. He's someone who can provide plenty of value even if he doesn't have a dominant counting category anywhere. For the next pick, I am going to go with pure unadulterated upside, and I'm going to take Dylan Tate. Tate is probably the only pitcher who I am going to have within the first maybe 7 or 8 spots in my rankings I'm going to put out initial rankings in the next week or so from this draft class from a dynasty perspective. And, he's the guy that's worth it. Tate has legitimate front of the rotation upside. And I like his chances of tapping into it better than the very small group of other pitchers who can claim similar upside, even though no one quite has Tate's upside. Worst comes to worst, I think Tate is an elite reliever, that's plenty valuable in fantasy. But I don't think it comes to that. I think he sticks as a starter, and I think he racks up strikeouts with the best of them. So those are my two. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts, but otherwise, if you don't have any thoughts, then Ben, you are up at number 5.
I just want real bold going with the second and fourth player, Brett. That's what the people want to hear.
I know. They want to hear us go chalk. Always chalk. All the time.
All right. Well, I'm just going to go absolutely crazy here and make the very bold pick of going with Ian Happ, who the Cubs took down at 9. According to Chris Crawford, he potentially has the best pure bat in the draft. I know there's not a ton of power there right now, but everything I've read suggests that could manifest itself as Happ gets a little older, even though he is a college guy. And Crawford seems to indicate he also potentially could play second base. So while, you know, there's really not a lot of point in speculating about that right now, it's at least worth noting. Great contextual factors if he stays in Chicago. Seems like a fairly safe pick, a pick that isn't high on upside, but I don't want to take any pitcher who isn't Tate this early, so I am happy with Happ.
Okay, I'm a little bit torn here, although it's still going to be mostly chalk. I guess I get to pick 2, don't I? This is great. I'm not torn at all. I'm going to take Kyle Tucker, who was 5th overall for the Astros. He's someone that I talked to. One of the scouts who I've talked to was extremely high on him. I've seen I've seen a report that had him have an 80 hit tool. I don't think that's necessarily reasonable to expect, but he's someone who makes incredible he makes consistent contact, and it's consistently hard. And despite and I've watched a decent amount of video on Tucker, despite a really weird swing that I wouldn't expect to produce power, it's plus when he can pull it. And I think, you know, in time, he's going to be able to figure that out. And at 6'4", 175, there's projectability in terms of his power. So he's someone I really like. And I think, you know, if you play in a league that differentiates left, right, and center, I think he has a decent chance at staying in center, although it does depend how much he fills out. And so that obviously can help his value play up. And then I'll go with a guy who I definitely think can stay in center, and that's the Red Sox seventh pick with Andrew Benintendi. And he's just someone who really exploded up draft boards this year, obviously went very high. He's a college player, and, well, he's a little bit smaller. He's 5'10", I think. He is a legitimate center fielder. He's got above-average speed, so I think he can steal some bases. And, you know, he makes really good contacts with, again, similar to Tucker, most of the power coming pull side. But, you know, that's something that he can work on. And, you know, even as a smaller guy, maybe you get someone, you know, optimistically in the mold of A.J. Pollock or something like that. So, Brett, you can tell me if that's just a dangerous comp that I shouldn't have used, but that's kind of what came to mind when I was doing my research on him.
Yeah, I think Pollock is his absolute upside. Pollock is really
good. He's really good.
But yeah, I definitely like Benintendi from a fantasy sense, and from a real life sense too. I think his value might be, I think some people might be getting a little too excited about him, but as long as you're realistic about what he can be, I mean, he's a solid player.
I don't understand how he was. You have to compare him to either Jacoby Ellsbury or Trot Nixon. What is this AJ Pollock nonsense?
Yeah.
Are you saying he's a mix of both? That I can live with.
What if he's Mookie Betts?
No. Most I can give you is Troy O'Leary.
I'll take it.
Okay. All right. Well, for my last pick, I went with a very safe outfielder with not a ton of upside. This time I'm going to go with a risky outfielder with a lot of upside, and I'm going to go with Garrett. Is it Whitley? Or I'm assuming it's Whitley, who went down to 13 to the Rays. Plus speed, has the potential to hit for some power. I think he's going to take a while. Everything I'm reading suggests that he is fairly raw, but Crawford ended his write-up of this pick with, the upside is as good as any prep player not named Brendan Rodgers, and that sounds lovely to me in the third round, even though I hate the Rays.
Yeah. Whitley is the guy who I would have taken with my pick here. I agree. He's got upside across the board. He's just dripping with upside.
Get that checked out.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, it's not so bad.
Where is he leaking from?
Dripping, not leaking. Leaking sounds like it's coming from the inside. Dripping just it's just
yeah. Sweat doesn't come from the inside. I mean, it sort of does.
Well, it comes from the inside. And then we're not having this conversation.
Well,
I feel like we are.
We might be. So I get two picks here. So I'm going to go lots of upside. I am going to dip all the way down to a pick in the 20s here, and I'm going to take Cardinals outfielder Nick Plummer.
God damn it.
I really, really like Plummer's bat. I think he was one of the, you know, 10 to 12 best players overall from a non-fantasy standpoint available in this draft, and he's essentially a left field profile, which tells you all you need to know about his bat. He's got a potential plus hit tool, potential plus power. He's he's got all of the natural skills that you want to see, and the knock on him is that he hasn't played against a great competition in Michigan. He's a cold weather guy, and He is, I think the Cardinals are going to have gotten quite a fine with him. With my next pick, I'm gonna take Brady Aiken.
Dad damn it!
That Aiken is. We all know his deal by now. He's risky, but in fantasy leagues, you know, you have the opportunity to be a little bit riskier. And he is he's the number two pitcher for me on my board this year, even with all the injury issues. So yeah, Brady Aiken, you guys all know about him. He's good.
Sad face. That's brutal because now we're down to like four players I know. I am going to go with Daz Cameron here, who I think was overrated in some circles based on everything heading into the draft, but certainly only fell down to the Astros in the second round because of his demands. And obviously he would have gone a lot higher. Houston is a great environment for him. I like the offensive profile. I think this is wasn't a very hard choice for me. It was either going to be Aiken or Cam, whoever you didn't take.
That makes things difficult for me. It's getting to the point where if you want bats, you're gonna have to start getting weird.
Where's Mel?
correct me if I'm wrong on that, Brett, and you don't have to tell me who it is, but at this point, like, you know, if you want high upside bats, you have to reach and dream a little bit, kind of after the guys we've already selected. And you could probably say that about the guys already taken as well.
Yeah, it gets rough at this point. And, you know, I think we'll probably go through these somewhat quickly just because they all have their issues. This is sort of, are we all in agreement that this is sort of where it feels like it falls off?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is it. This is 10 players in. So get the top 10 pick this year if you know what's good for you, essentially.
Yeah, it's we're 11 players in. Okay, I'm going to go with Trenton Clark. Use the 15th overall pick for the Brewers. Basically, he's got a really weird way of swinging. He holds the bat kind of like a golf club, but it's worked for him thus far, and he's got plus speed. So basically, this is a speed grab with a chance to hit for average, and if anything else happens, it's gravy. Obviously, there's a little concern given that the Brewers haven't had a ton of success developing prospects at least recently, but Ray McDonald is the scouting director there, and so he's new, so maybe he has something on Clark that he likes for their system a little better. It's not ideal, but you know, I guess for a fourth pick it's fine. Like I said, I would like to continue to grab hitters, but I think you really have to start reaching at this point. So I'm going to grab Bo Burrows, who was a Tigers draft pick, which should tell you everything you need to know about him. He's right-handed and he throws hard. He is
pretty much
the biggest knock on him is his size. But I've talked to some scouts who saw him throughout the spring, and you're talking about a plus, maybe better fastball, and despite being a shorter pitcher, he does have broad shoulders, and he's really been able to hit, the low to mid 90s, like 93, 95 for a while now. He's touched 98. Again, this is a guy that he's shown a plus curveball, and there's a changeup that he has feel for. It's not exactly dynamic, but you don't get a guy with all three pitches at 22 if he has all of those things. So there's been a lot of positive reports on his makeup as well, his ability to make adjustments on the field without necessarily a coach getting in his ear. And so that's something I like to see when projecting forward. And I look forward to when the Tigers trade him for a reliever in the next couple of years. Maybe he'll land in a better pitching environment. So
I think that's what I'd be banking on if I end up with Burrows. Yeah. Okay, I am going to do the obvious and go with Carson Fulmer, pretty much because he landed with the White Sox. If he had landed in, I think, almost any other organization around here, I wouldn't feel as okay-ish about his chances to start. But the White Sox tend to excel with these sort of unconventional guys. And as everyone says, you know, if he does end up in the bullpen, which I admit is probably more likely than not, he has the electric stuff you'd like to see in a closer. So not a pick I feel great about, but, you know, at least he's with the White Sox, and at least he didn't, you know, end up with, I don't know, what's a team that can't develop pitching, the Twins or something like that.
Yeah. Speaking of Twins who can't develop pitching, I'm not going to take Tyler J as he continues to free fall in this draft. I've wanted to take Fulmer, but he's now gone. I am going to go with the wonderful combination of Cornelius Randolph, the first round pick of the Phillies, and Walker Buehler, the first round pick of the Dodgers. Buehler is in the rotation with Fulmer. He has his own issues, whether people think he can stick as a starter. I think he can. I think he has lower upside than Fulmer does. I think I'm actually higher on Fulmer than most. But Buehler has really strong stuff across the board, and the Dodgers have a pretty good track record of developing pitching. So I think that's a good fit. On the other hand, Randolph is one of the strongest prep bats available in this draft. I think he is he's a guy who will stick in the infield. He will he'll be able to hit for average, hit for power. He's at least got a chance to do that. And you know, Philadelphia's not a bad place to top it all off. So those are my two. So Ben, back to you.
Okay, I am going to go with Colby Allard, because what could possibly go wrong with a prep pitching prospect with an injury history?
Craig?
Oh, okay, that was, yeah. Okay.
No, the upside.
I'm totally ready. No, I'm not ready.
The upside is there for Allard. He would have gone higher in this draft, I think, if it wasn't for the back injury. It seems like Atlanta should have enough cap space to act, not cap space, but you know what I mean, draft allotment to actually sign him, and that's a pretty good organization for developing pitching. So another slow-moving guy, but, you know, at this point, I'm not seeing a lot that I love, and Allard at least has the potential to be someone who I think is enticing in dynasty leagues, you know, a year or two from now.
Sure. Okay, so I continue to be less than thrilled with options. I'm going to go ahead and take a guy I am assuming this team was pretty thrilled to get him at this point, but I'm going to take John Harris, who's a pitcher the Blue Jays drafted at 29. I know it's not the sexiest profile, but as we've kind of been talking about, that's not readily available in this draft. I think he's someone who could be in the majors relatively quickly. He's a starter for Missouri State. I know he had kind of a little bit of late helium. He has a fastball that he can get into the mid 90s, touch 95. He'll flash a plus curveball. He has a slider that's a distinct and different pitch that he can throw, and his changeup has average potential as well. So he's got a bunch of different pitches. I think, you know, the Blue Jays tend to draft and develop decently. And like I said, I think there's the option for immediate payoff, which, you know, we're kind of talking about, I guess he's my sixth round pick at this point in a lightish draft, that I'm not unhappy to get someone with a chance to return dividends somewhat quickly. For my seventh round pick, I'm going to go the opposite direction and take someone who is going to take a long time and that I can dream on, but it's another Rockies selection. I'm going to play to that, to Coors Field, and I'm going to take Phil Nevin's son, Tyler. He's already had Tommy John, which is a good thing. He's going to be injury prone like Phil was. But he does have serious power. He had a really strong senior year. I think he can stick at third base, even with the Tommy John. And I think, you know, you get someone with his bloodlines, And, well, he doesn't have the feel for the game you might want out of someone who was the son of a major leaguer. I think the power is there, and we'll see about the ability to hit. But combine that type of power with Coors Fields, and the payoff could be huge. It's obviously a risky selection, though.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Okay, I'm going back and forth between two names here. But when in doubt, take the hitter, and I'm going to go a little off the board and go with Donny Deweese, because if I'm going to gamble on anything at this point, I'd like to gamble on a hit tool and speed combination. Another Chicago hitter. Why not? Great time, like great 1920s old-timey gangster name.
Definitely with the old-timey gangster name. It's enjoyable. Not an elite name in this class, but it's certainly
it's a second round name. He was taken appropriately.
Yep. So I am going to take two guys here. I am going to start by taking another Phillies pick. I'm going to take second baseman Scott Kingery out of Arizona. He's got He should be able to stick at second. He's got some speed. He's got some pop. He's a all around pretty good hitter. He should be able to hold down the fort in steals, you know, possibly running up to the, 25-30 range with reasonable contributions everywhere else across the board. Nothing sexy, but, at this point you're not going to find much sexiness. And then I am going to take Chris Betts, the Tampa Bay pick. I really like his bat. I'm not super optimistic that he can stay at catcher, but he's at least got a chance. Even if he's a first baseman, I think he's got the potential for to be above average hit plus power. Which even though Tampa takes a while to push their guys through, it could work.
Okay, I'm going to end Kyle Funkhauser's slide here, much as the Dodgers did in their draft. Obviously a much riskier proposition than any of us felt a few months ago, but the upside is still there, and this is a pretty good organizational match for him, so I feel fine about getting him this late. I thought he'd be gone when I took Deweese.
Craig?
Yeah, I am going to take since Brett wouldn't let me take their first pick, I'm going to take their second, or possibly the third pick, I think. But I'm going to take Bryce Denton from the Cardinals. He was the 66th overall pick. But tell me if this sounds familiar. He can really hit, and he might not have a position just yet. He might be an outfielder. He might be a third baseman. But, boy, can he hit. And I don't know if you've heard, but the Cardinals have success with those type of players. So he's also really strong, and while that hasn't really manifested itself in big power numbers, even in high school, he's young for his grade, I guess, his age, you can say. He won't turn 18 until August. And again, you get a high makeup guy, with a mature approach and the ability to hit, and put him in the Cardinals org, and I'm interested. I had not really settled on who I wanted to take next. So just give me a minute. Oh, yes, here it is. I'm going to rely on some organizational trends, and despite testing positive for smoking pot before the draft, I'll tab Phil Bickford, who was the Giants' first overall pick, 18th overall. He was a high-profile guy coming out of high school. The Blue Jays picked him and didn't sign him. I think they had him 11th or 12th. And so he's been, again, like a high-profile guy for a while now. He went to UCLA. He transferred from UCLA to a junior college so he could enter this draft. Obviously, you get a little bit of makeup concerns when you have a talented pitcher like that leaving a storied program like UCLA, plus the pot, the testing positive for pot, which, well, no judgment here, but again, you got the makeup part comes in knowing that you're going to get tested, and so you should be able to avoid it. That said, he can hit the mid-90s with his fastball, and though he tends to sit in the low 90s when he's starting, And, you know, he can miss bats with the fastball, which is something I like to see. And you put him, you know, you put him with the Giants, who have done a lot of good work with another college pitcher they drafted last year, Tyler Beede. And, you know, I'm hoping at this point it's my last pick. So.
Yeah, this won't be popular, but at this point I'm fine taking Tyler J. I understand odds are he's going to be in the bullpen, but 65 fastball, 60 slider. Honestly, my thought process is if he does end up in the bullpen, at least we will know that probably within 2 years, when a lot of the other guys I could take might still only be in double A. And then I can at least just cut him and, you know, replenish my minor league supply. So on the off chance he's able to leverage those two pitches in the rotation, I can take him this late and feel fine about it.
Sounds good. The guy who I'm going to take is probably not the highest ranked guy still on my board. I could take Tyler Stevenson, but I already took a catcher and I don't want to take a second one. That's boring. So I'm going to take the man who got lumped in with all the Brady Aiken mess last year and go with Jacob Nix, who I think, people know him because he was involved in that whole mess, but he's legit. He can be a solid number three starter at the major league level. And, you know, in that park, I think he has as good a chance as any to develop into a reliable fantasy starter eventually. So that does it. We got through it, right?
Yeah. I think just obviously we've run through this. We tried to move pretty quick because these things can get old on a podcast format, but are there any, as someone who's not as up on the draft class as you are there any picks kind of in general that you felt were far out of what's to expect, or other, you know, guys who you think definitely should have been picked in this type of format at the expense of someone else?
No, I think they were all pretty, I think they're all more or less the names I thought were going to get picked. I'll just talk about like three or four names really quickly, just rapid fire. A couple names that jump out, Mike Nikorak. I really like him from a talent perspective, but he's going to Coors. This makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, if he were in a neutral park, I think he would have gone in the sixth or the seventh round in this draft. Tyler Stevenson, less upside with the bat than Chris Betts, but greater likelihood to stick a catcher. That said, I don't care as much because the bat's slightly lesser. Another guy to touch on real quick is Mitchell Hanson, the pick of the Dodgers. Good all-around tools in the.
I was really tempted to take him.
Yeah, he's got some upside to him, and one of the other bloodline guys in the draft, Cabrian Hayes, who could have solid hit and power tools as a third baseman for Pittsburgh. So
also just on Hanson, just a quick shout out to former BP prospect team member Josh Herzenberg. That was his pick.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's awesome! I didn't know that.
Good going, yeah. Josh.
Yeah, so I thought that was very cool. And one guy that at least intrigued me when I was doing some research, and Brett, maybe you can speak to him, is Richie Martin a guy that interests you at all as a shortstop with a decent, you know, he's got a good on-base profile, can hit a little bit. I don't know if there's power in the frame, but he's one of the guys that kind of stuck out to me.
Not really. Do you know who he reminds me of from a fantasy standpoint, if it works out? It's like Marcus Semien.
But isn't Semien having like a really good year?
Yeah, but not that great of a year. And I think I'd prefer to go for upside when the ceiling is that limited.
Yeah,
at least when you're talking about these.
No, that's good information. Ben, was there anyone that kind of stuck out to you, or
how do you feel about Ashley Russell being the direct descendant of Clay Buchholz?
Yes.
Fair.
Okay.
Good take.
Brett, and I'm sorry because I don't want to repeat it if you said it, and I apologize if I missed it. But did you mention Tristan McKenzie aside from his name?
I did not.
Okay, he's a guy I really like. I've loved the Indians draft the last few year years. And he's a guy that just stuff-wise is really interesting. And, again, if you watch video on him, he might be the skinniest person alive. Like, it's incredible that he can play a sport competitively. He's 6'5 and 160 pounds. But he can throw in the low 90s, and he's someone that if you want to dream, you know, if you want to take a last-round flyer and hope someone adds weight to dream, that's the guy I would be targeting in that sense.
Okay, Craig, since you are not as well-versed as Brett, I have some trivia for you, okay?
Yes.
I'm going to give you three names who we didn't mention in our name draft, and you have to tell me which one isn't an actual prospect.
Oh, shit.
You ready?
Yes.
All right. Von Eshelman, Lucas Herbert, or Enya Brennan? Welcome back to episode 51 of Tino. As always, we're going to send you out with a little housekeeping. If you're into daily fantasy sports, this is the season for you, as the entire BP Fantasy team has been pretty actively involved hopping in these leagues pretty much every weekday for the past several weeks. So
I'm cleaning up, baby.
Are you?
Yeah, I just got second place. I've made money. I've been doing well.
Well, dinner on you next time I see you.
Absolutely.
If you feel like playing, let us know or just follow us on Twitter and you'll know how to do so. Please rate and review this podcast on iTunes. We've had a bunch of reviews lately, but the more the merrier, and getting to 100 before the season is over would be great. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast, find us on Facebook, or get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett at Dynasty Guru, Mauricio at mrubio52, Craig at CD, that's CD as in charmingly devilish, Goldstein, and you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.
Well, I'm buying dinner, you're
out. I thought that was implied in the fact that we'd be hanging out.
Alright, well, just, you know, I want it to be above
board. Appreciate that. Charmingly devilish.
No one named Vaughn. I refuse to admit this. I mean, I refuse to accept this.
I think you missed the last one, didn't you?
I did.
Enya Brennan.
I got it. I was just.
Oh, no, it's because usually we say Enya before we kick out this podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Okay. I get it now.
Enya.
I liked Brennan as a last name.
That's pretty good. I looked it up.
Oh, is that seriously her
she's
last name?
Anglicized as Enya Brennan. She was born Ethni Ni Wachin because she's really? Irish.
Right.
I think I just made her Jewish.
I did not know Enya Brennan. I did not know it was a thing, Brennan.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you.